Hey, Crime Junkies. If you are anything like me, you have not been able to stop thinking about the case of Lavinia Johnson. So I wanted to give you a bonus episode because one of her friends actually reached out to us, someone who went through basic training with her, who knew people in her unit when she died. And she shares with us some of the theories, some of the rumors going around at the time, pieces of information I didn't know at the time of our episode, and what it's like to really be a woman in the military at this time. So I hope you enjoy this extra episode. Do you want to start by giving a little bit of background as to who you are and how you knew Lavinia?
Yes, yeah. So I joined the Army in September of 2004, and I was in there for, I was in the military for about 8 years, and then I was medically retired due to injuries sustained in combat. But I met Lavinia when we were at the MEPS, which is the Military Entrance Processing Station, on September 15th, where we swore in. They got us our all our paperwork together so we could head off to basic training. So I met her there, and we flew on the plane together. We went through in processing together at Fort Jackson, South Carolina, and we ended up in the same company for basic training.
I imagine you would make fast friends with somebody that way. Like, you're in a very, like, different situation than, like, civilian life. So did you guys get pretty close pretty quickly?
You get close to people. You get, especially for females, you get close really quick because you're with them for 9 weeks. And everything you're going through, they're going through the same thing. So you have, like, this close bond with the, with everybody you've gone to basic with, pretty much.
Why do you think, you said especially females, do you think it's different for females than it is for men going through training?
Well, the military is a man's world. There are more men than there are females. With females, there's only, like, a little group. There's a small group of us compared to the men that are taking up most of the ranks. Mm-hmm. When I was in the military, I was a mechanic. And one of my duty stations I was in, I was one of 8 females in that unit.
Wow.
So you try to get close to the females if you can. So,
yeah, I would imagine. I mean, even in companies that I've worked at, like, if it's a lot of men, you tend to bond with the women you're with. You have something in common, at least, and you got to stick together. It's hard being a woman in a man's world.
Yes, yes, definitely. Especially when you're in the military. So,
yeah, like, you know, my corporate cushy life, I have no idea what you went through.
So we got to know each other. The first night we were in basic training together, we have our headgear, or like our hat, we call them our covers, wasn't fitting our head. So all the girls got together and was taking out Lavinia's braids so her headgear would fit the next morning. We got no sleep. We were just making sure she was good to go, because we were like I said, if one person's messed up, then we're all messed up. So we gotta stick together and be all messed up together, or get everybody straight.
So how long were you guys together there?
We were there for 9 weeks. We split our separate ways so she could go to her advanced training and me to my advanced training. And then it just so happened, when I was done with all my training, we ended up at the same base at Fort Campbell, Kentucky.
Where was that located at?
It is in Clarksville, Tennessee. It's right along the Tennessee-Kentucky border.
Okay.
So I was walking around and I saw her, and I'm like, hey, what's going on? How have you been? How is training and everything else like that? I mean, you wouldn't even know anything was wrong if there was anything wrong. She was this bubbly, sparky person, just like she was in basic training. She always had a good attitude about things, and I'm like, are you ready to go? She's like, yeah, I'm getting ready to deploy. I'm like, are you ready? She's like, I'm just doing what I got to do. As any soldier would say, I just got to do what I got to do. So.
Now, you say you wouldn't know anything was wrong. Do you think something happened before she even went over to Iraq?
I don't know. I wasn't really familiar with what everything was going on. I mean, a lot was going on. I was being told that I was going to deploy in a few months, and then I had talked to her, and she was deploying. So it was like something that was embedded in us in basic that, hey, you guys are going to end up down there. There's no question about it. Okay. So, yeah. I didn't see anything wrong. There could have been. It just wasn't really a big thing.
So did you guys keep in touch after she was deployed?
Well, that's the problem. It's hard to keep in touch with somebody when they're deployed because you don't know what their address is going to be. Because this is our first deployment. So I didn't know if they had internet or anything like that, because I was like, I don't know how to get a hold of you afterwards, because Iraq is a pretty spaced out country. But I did keep in contact with others that were stationed with her in her unit.
Okay.
And one of them came back to me right before I deployed and goes, well, hey, you hear about Johnson? I'm like, what? Yeah, she deployed. How's she doing? No, she got killed. And I was like, what? Enemy fire? And they go, no, a group of soldiers found her. Looked like her body had been dragged. Somebody tried killing her and burning her body to hide evidence. That's what we were saying.
So people internally from day one were saying that this is a giant cover-up.
Oh, yeah. And this is like the lower ranking, like private, all the way up to like maybe a specialist. So from the get-go, everybody said it was a cover-up. Like all the younger soldiers at the time said it was a cover-up. Some of the stuff that I came up with was like, it could have been the local nationals, because when I was in Iraq, we had local nationals come on the bases and come work for us, like clean up trash or something like that. But the way they were said that, I'm like, but a local national couldn't do something the extent of what they did with her. And then we were thinking maybe it could be someone from her unit. It had to have been someone that she knew.
Why do you think that?
You tend to stick together when you're in a combat zone, like Iraq. We call it, you battle up, you have a battle buddy with you. So anywhere you go, you have somebody else with you. So she could have been walking with a battle buddy, and that battle buddy could have been the one, or she could have walked with somebody, was walking with somebody she knew from another soldier, and it could have, something could have happened and they didn't like the outcome, so they went a little too far.
Well, I remember the one thing from, at least from the documentary I saw, however accurate that is, that her dad said she didn't have a battle buddy, and that was actually something he was really worried about and was trying to push her to get one. Is it often that people aren't assigned one?
We're not really assigned one. We don't get assigned ones over there. We just kind of like walk in a group.
Gotcha.
So they never really assigned us one, but she could have been walking with somebody, or she could have, I don't know. I can't tell you what exactly it could have been, but she could have been walking with somebody that night, even though her dad told her to walk with a battle buddy. She probably listened to her dad and got a battle buddy that night or whatever. Possible.
Yeah.
And then there was also the speculation it could have been a contractor.
Yeah, I heard a little bit about that, but I don't know how that really works in the military. So if you could shed some light.
So back in 05, KBR Halliburton were the civilian contractors. Like, you go in and you apply to work overseas as a contractor, as a civilian contractor. So you and I could apply to work, like work in the food industry, like cooking meals for soldiers over there. And we get a contract to work on it or to build up the bases or something like that. And it's contractors from all walks of life. So your next door neighbor could be a contractor. Some of them can be prior military a lot of times, but that's pretty much what the contractors were there. They were on a government contract working, like doing other things so we could focus on the task at hand, pretty much.
Gotcha.
And the thing is about Halliburton and KBR, they're known for their sexual assaults, rapes, and females in Iraq.
Wait, really?
Yes. There were reports of them, like, assaulting and raping soldiers or women, period. And there were cover-ups there, too. So
was it just, like, one of those things where, you know, you get over there and you kind of start hearing rumors and everyone's just like, okay, just, like, avoid the contractors or avoid these types of people because this is just something that's known, but we're really not doing anything about it. You just have to, like, it's on you, like, it's basically on you to keep yourself safe.
We got briefed. Well, the unit I was in, I was in a really good unit at the time, and we got briefed, and they're like, hey, if you go anywhere near the contractors, make sure you're with somebody. There's been speculation that this has been going on, so we want to keep you guys safe.
Wait, what?
Yeah.
So their way of keeping you safe was saying, like, hey, we know we're contracting with people. There are all these allegations that they're assaulting women. Just, like, have a buddy, not, like, let's find new contractors?
No, yeah. Because it was military versus private contracting. So military couldn't do anything about it. So what they did is they just told us to stay away and battle up.
Wow.
Yeah. So there's a lot of things that didn't make sense to me back then. Still doesn't make sense to me today. So it's a little nerve-wracking.
So I had, like, you know, when I had done research for this show, obviously the contractors came up, but it seemed like everyone was theorizing that it was actually somebody in the military that did something to her. Do you think it's just as likely or more likely that it was contractor?
Well, you know, even though she was found in a contracting tent, I theorized more that it was somebody that she knew or somebody that was in the military. Because you kind of let your guard down a little bit when you're with somebody else who's in uniform with you, especially, like, mm-hmm. when you know them. One of the speculations was this general. They're saying that he was some higher up that was in charge of her, and it wouldn't surprise me if he did something. The military figured it out that he was the one who did it. And they covered it up because they want their officers to look good.
Why would a general want to kill a private?
Well, speculation says that he was having an affair or a relationship with a contractor over there, and he was told to stop, and he did not, and Lavinia saw it, and that could have been his motive.
Do you, like, as somebody who's been in the military, because, like, when I hear that, I'm like, well, my gosh, he's already, like, her boss. If I would feel like he would have enough power just to kind of be like blackmailing with her with her own job, like, don't say anything or I could make your life hell. That seems pretty easy to me rather than, like, risking killing somebody. But as somebody who's been over there, who understands that, does it seem logical to you that that would be a measure that they would go to?
Tensions are high over there, so you don't think straight sometimes. I mean, we had an issue with another commander when I was stationed somewhere else, who ended up getting fired and was very publicly known. But they didn't do anything about it. They just covered his stuff up and said, just get out, just retire, and you'll be fine. They do that just to kind of cover their government. But I guess you would say this is probably like one of a million cover-ups that happen on a daily basis.
Well, and that's kind of like what, as I was doing, you know, originally it was just Lavinia's story that I was trying to cover. And the more I researched it, the more I was finding, oh, it's like this one and like this one and like this one. And it's shocking.
Yeah. But one thing that somebody had mentioned was the original soldiers who found her wrote out what they saw in the sworn statements, and those sworn statements are gone. Nobody knows where they're at.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, and part of what's so strange is the way that her body was found. Like,
oh yeah.
I mean, it was just such overkill. I mean, such a weird way, like all of the possible wound stat, parts of her missing, like cut out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It just, to me, it just didn't make sense that it was a suicide with her. Because even that, like going back to basic training and remembering her, remembering that, you know, we had some tough times in basic and we pushed each other. Even in the toughest moment that we were in basic training together, she seemed to push it through. She didn't let it bother her and she just pushed through. But you just learn, okay, what's the task at hand? Got to keep going. So to me, she was that kind of girl in basic training. So I don't think that would even play a factor in it. I just think somebody was just finding a bunch of stuff and pushing their way.
Well, I mean, even if for some reason, like her breakup or whatever reason, even if she got super depressed, like I think it's really hard to argue that it's suicide just because what she cut out parts of her own vagina and anus and tongue and then like set part of herself on fire. Like none of that makes sense before shooting herself.
Yeah, that makes no sense to me at all. And like in the crime scene photo, it shows the weapon is like on the other side of the tent.
Yeah.
And as I'm 5'9", and a M16 rifle is 40 inches. That thing is tall. There is no way a 5'1" female can like wrap themselves around it and do that to her. Also, I didn't know if you had figured, have found this out. The serial number on the weapon that they found in the tent was not the serial number that was assigned to her.
No, I didn't know that.
Yep.
Do they know who it was assigned to?
Army won't release it. That was another thing. Nobody would release like that information. And it was like a digit off or something. Because I had read, I have been reading about it. And these are published by Donald Watkins, which is the Johnson's attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And he wrote all these different speculations of like all this stuff. And one of it was the serial numbers. The serial number from one ended in 28, and the one that she was assigned was ended in 69.
Do they, I mean, it seems kind of stupid for someone to leave their own gun there, but do you think they just like freaked out and?
Yeah, they probably, and where the shell casing was, there was no way, the way the trajectory goes out, like the way the casing goes out of the M16 does not make sense where the casing was. I mean, everything was staged in there. And a bunch of us that were talking at the time, we were like, there's no way that could happen. You know, it was so, so upsetting.
So did the people that you were in contact with that were stationed over there with her, as this thing played out and they learned more and more about how she was actually found, what were the main theories that were emerging, or like what questions did they have? Was anyone shocked that it was getting covered up, or is it just kind of like status quo?
We are brand new privates in the military, so we were kind of shocked that this was happening. For like, women have come such a long way since the Gulf War to like now, to 2005, you know, a whole decade's gone by, and we are surprised that, you know, that they're still covering up things like this in the military. And as I progressed on through my career, things are still getting covered up. And it wasn't just Lavina, it was just other things that were going on. So it seems like it was more like the status quo. Like, okay, what the military says is what the military says. Which, thinking back now, I'm just like, I can't. If the military says this, there has to be something else that they're hiding. It doesn't matter if it's they got the wrong type of fish for dinner that night. There's a cover up going in there somewhere. I mean, that's the way I started thinking with a lot of stuff that I've seen.
There was I think it basically came out that Lavinia had been sexually assaulted shortly before her alleged suicide slash murder. Do you think it's possible that whoever had assaulted her was the one that did this and was afraid of her coming forward? Like, it seems hard to believe that she would want to be around that person alone or trust them, but it seems like a really good reason to want to have her gone. But I've also read that, like, people who were the assaulters, really, it's like they get a slap on the wrist and not a whole lot happens. So I don't know if there's a lot of motive or if they thought they could get away with it.
It could have been, like I said, it could have been someone she knew, someone in the military. That one always has been in the back of my mind too. Because there are two ways to report a sexual assault in the military. One is full out, you just tell them that you do the rape kit and everything, but your name's on it, so the assaulter knows who you are. And then you do it anonymously, and they don't do anything, and the assaulter never gets anything done.
What would be the point of reporting it anonymously?
It could be someone in your command, and you don't want them to know that you reported them.
Wouldn't they know it was you, or is the thought that they're doing this to so many people, they don't know who came forward? Because in my mind, like, if you assaulted somebody and then you got reported, like, I know who I assaulted.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's so many assaults that go on. Like, I've actually gone up and confronted somebody who had done something to me, and I'm like, you need to stop. You really do. Oh, we're not doing anything wrong. We're just playing around. I mean, so they, in the back of their minds, they're not thinking they're doing anything wrong. They're thinking they're just doing the norm. And if you try to tell somebody, sometimes that's why a lot of assaults and rapes don't get recorded as much in the military, because of the repercussions we will get, the pushback we'll get, even though they say they'll save us from it. I've seen it too many times that there's so much pushback that everyone is afraid to say anything.
You know, so you said it happened to you, and if you don't want to, like, go into it, you absolutely don't have to. But I'm just wondering, you know, part of what we talked about in our episode is they say 1 in 3 women are assaulted, and they don't really advertise this. Like, did you have any idea what you were getting into when you enlisted?
No, I didn't. I grew up, my dad was a cop, so I thought I was going to do something like a world police kind of thing. I didn't think that I was going to get assaulted the way I did. I mean, granted, I had heard what had happened to women back in the Gulf War. They were getting assaulted and it was being brought up and everything. But I didn't think it was going to happen with our generation. I thought they had just, like, figured it out, but no, they were covering it up so they could get more women in. Some stuff that's happened to me was, I didn't sleep with a certain guy, so I was being verbally harassed and called all kinds of names under the book because I wouldn't sleep with one guy. So, and then I've also had issues where guys would come up to me, like when I was in Iraq, actually, I had just some random staff sergeant come up to my door, knocking on the door in the middle of the night, trying to get into my room. So that.
Why?
I have no idea. He's like, let me come in. I'm like, I don't know who you are, and you need to get away. So I ended up telling and he wasn't even anybody from my unit. It turned out that he had other priors trying to do the same thing to other women and was facing a lot of rape charges at the time. I was lucky enough, when I was in Iraq, I had my command who looked out for me, and whenever they when I told them, they found out who he was and made sure he never came around us again, and that was truth. But not every female has that.
Such a shame. I mean, you guys are already over there, like, doing such hard work, literally risking your lives to have to, like, have something else to, like, be looking over your shoulder. It's wrong. It's exhausting. I can't imagine.
Yeah. It's the tensions are high when you're over there. And then especially in certain areas, certain areas where I was in Afghanistan and Iraq, we were in tents. There were no locks, no nothing. People could just walk in and out of our tent. And I was scared to death then because of what happened to me in Iraq. So, I mean, that could be another thing. Someone knocked at her door and she saw the rank and she followed them and something like that happened.
Hmm.
It's a lot of possibilities.
Knowing how the military works, do you think anything will happen? I mean, or do you think this is just going to eventually be swept under the rug and continue to happen?
I think this is going to be something that's never going to rectify itself. Unless it happens to someone high up in Washington, happens to one of their daughters, nothing's going to come of it, honestly. My fiance and I are both retired military and we have a 2-year-old daughter. And I think, you know, if she wants to join the military, I'd be happy. But then again, I think of all the stuff that's happened to me and happens to people that I know. And I still fear for her. And I feel fear for our future females that join the military and have to endure this kind of harassment.
Because you don't feel like anything's actually changing. You just think they're doing a better job of hiding it. In 18 years, when your daughter would want to enlist, you think we'd be right back where we are in 2018?
I think we would be. I don't think anything's going to change unless, again, like I said, some politician up in Washington sees it happen to one of their daughters. I don't foresee any of it ever shedding light and coming to it.
That's so sad.
I know it is. It's one of the many secrets the military has. And unless you're in there, my sister was telling me that it's like you're in it's like a fraternity. Like you're part of that fraternity. Oh, they're known for all the rapes and everything else like that. But the fraternity ends up covering it up somehow, some way.
Well, it's kind of easy to do when you're like, you're your own law enforcement. You only really have to answer to you. And whatever you say just goes. Like, there's nobody that has any leverage on you. You know what I mean? There's no one who can tell them what to do. They can just say, oh, it's classified.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, I kind of get some things, oh, that's classified. But I actually had an experience working in JAG for a while.
What's that?
That is the military attorneys. Paralegals, the law.
Gotcha.
So if you were to get in trouble, they would process it. And there are so many things I saw in there. I was disgusted.
What do you mean?
Let's see. Pedophilia.
What?
A lot of rape. And these were all high-ranking enlisted. I was like, seriously? These people are in the military? Yeah.
And it was stuff that would like come through the office, and they like, were they prosecuting it?
Yep, they were prosecuting, getting them kicked out. They were going through court martials.
It sounds like they were at least trying to take care of it, but definitely not advertising it. Like I have no idea that stuff's going on.
Yeah, the military, we take care of things what we call in-house. We take care of it in-house. We don't let anybody else know what's going on.
When someone takes care of it in-house, like, does that, because I would imagine we as the public would be hearing about it if they were like dishonorably discharged and like they went to jail. But is a lot of it just like, okay, you leave the army, we don't talk about it like that?
If they leave the army under the Patriot Act, I believe, you can look up anybody's discharge papers. It's public knowledge. Anybody can inquire about it.
So then did most of them get like, when they went to court for something like pedophilia or whatever, were they going to jail or like what was happening? What was the end result for most of these cases?
I don't know, because I was in the beginning part of it. I was helping the attorney get everything together, and one of the paralegals goes, hey, look at this. And it was a high-ranking enlisted was getting court-martialed for pedophilia. And the thing is, sometimes if it's a local case, the military will charge them first, and then they'll hand them over to the civilian side, the general public.
Gotcha.
it all depends on where it happened and when it happened and how it has affected the other party. Military looks at it first, and then if they feel that it needs to go to somebody else, like go to local law enforcement, they'll send them there.
It's a whole different world.
Yeah. You're literally living two different worlds when you're in the military.
So is there anything else that you think like the general public needs to know?
If you do plan on joining the military, don't listen to recruiters. But make sure you, when you're in or if you're already in, make sure you have a trusted friend that you're with at all times. Even if you're just here in the United States, you go somewhere, make sure you always have a buddy with you. And I think that's a good rule. Always make sure you have somebody. And also, there is a Facebook page, Justice for PFC Lavina Johnson, and they have updates on there about what's going on. After 13 years, they have updates of what may be going on. And I found, that's where I found the articles by Donald Watkins, the Johnson family attorney, about the murders. There's four parts to it, so it's a really good read.
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time and reaching out. This has been great.
Oh yeah, not a problem. Like, this has been something that has been eating me away since I found out about her. I can't believe it's been this long since this happened to her, and whoever did it needs to come up and needs to fess up for what they did.
I just can't believe that nobody, I mean, I think we care, our listeners care, but the fact that everyone's just willing to keep going, it didn't happen. It's so concerning, because I just can't imagine an organization that sees something that brutal happen and is willing to protect one person. Like, in my mind, that is that's a huge liability to have. Like, why are we not just taking care of it? To me, it's not, maybe it's a lawsuit by her family, but if we're just going to allow this systematic abuse to continue over and over instead of just what is the harm in just addressing it and fixing it? Why is that not an option?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really would like to see something done for our future female veterans that come into the military, because what I endured, I don't want any other female to endure, and especially what I've experienced with friends and battles like Lavina, I don't want to see that happen to anybody either. It's heartbreaking on the people who were in basic training with them, and the people, and I mean, it's even more heartbreaking for the families, but knowing that something brutal happened is just sad. As long as I'm alive, I still want to keep her memory alive and make sure that that something's getting done, even if it's just blogging about it or something. I still want to know what's going on.
Yeah, for people to remember her and, again, just keep people talking about it, because it's crazy that anyone is willing to just look the other way.
Yeah. If you see something, tell somebody, especially those in the military. Don't worry about the repercussions. If it's going to keep you from harm, try to find somebody you trust.
Well, again, I so appreciate you chatting with us. I really appreciate your time.
All right. Thanks, Ashley.
Bye.
Bye.
This episode of Crime Junkie was researched, written, and hosted by me. All of our editing and sound production was done by David Flowers, and all of our music, including our theme, comes from Justin Daniel. Crime Junkie is an Audio Chuck production. So what do you think, Chuck? Do you approve?